very existence is wrapped up in the things you are here to feel. Whatever you choose for a career path, remember the struggles along the way are only meant to shape you for your purpose.
Welcome to England.
So today I have on Charlie Westerman. Charlie is doing some really cool things. He's very into history and philosophy and libertarianism, and I thought that I'd have him on to talk about those things. So welcome to the show.
Yeah, Ella, thanks for having me on. It's I'm super pumped to be in Bloom's emergency backup. I love being the show's plan B so far. You forgot you had a podcast this week. You woke up on Tuesday or Monday, said, oh, I got a podcast to do. Let's get Charlie Westerman on. I hate talking to myself in third person, but I know that was your thought.
Yeah, you're welcome for being the emergency slot. Not many people get that opportunity.
I agree. I'm honored.
I'm so glad. Okay, anyways. So, Charlie, tell them what you're doing. Like, what are the projects that you're working on? What are you super excited about right now?
Sure. So, the main project I'm working on right now is a Twisted History of the United States, which is a history book going from the 1450s to the 1930s. It uses some aspects of social media, which was my idea. I'm co-creating this. The author of this book is my high school history teacher, Gary Richide, the very intelligent Gary Richide, who's absolutely knows this stuff front to back. I'm not like him. I just had this really cool idea one day where I could create fake tweets. So it's basically, the book is filled with tweets. So George Washington, we can make him look like he tweeted something. We make Abraham Lincoln look like he tweeted the Gettysburg Address. And I got with Richide and I said, I think we should do a book on this because you're super intelligent on this stuff. And the book's, we've been working on it for 2 years and we just started our Hot Water History podcast where we talk more about current events and a little more local stuff to Chicago, Chicago suburbs. Also with Christianity, we tie that in as well. But the book's coming out July 4th. I'm super pumped for it. I know we're crowdfunding for it right now. We're about 2/3 the way there. Looking to raise $5,500. Got around $3,700, $3,800. So we're starting our campaign and looking to promote this thing.
So it comes out July 4th and y'all are currently raising money for the publishing and what else?
Yeah, so we've got our it's mostly publishing, mostly promoting, but we hired, neither of us know anything about publishing, so we wanted to see who's committed to this book, who wants to help us out. We were able to hire our self-publisher already. Shout out to Bookmaker Brett. Bookmaker Brett's doing a great job right now, and we're really hammering out all of the final details and hoping to get this in people's hands by July 4th. And like I said, I'm super ecstatic for people to read this and get back to me about how much their worldview has changed. Cause I know my worldview changed after having Gary Richide as an American history teacher. And I think now that people get to read his book and now that he's even more scalable now that he's not in a classroom, I think it's going to be really special what happens this next year.
Okay. So I'll have to ask him one day eventually about his not in a classroom story, because I imagine that he can do that more justice than you can.
Yeah, he can. That's very well documented. He talks about it a little bit on his website, but I don't want to say anything that that is untrue. But exactly. I think he's the right person to ask about that.
Yes, definitely. We'll ask him something about that. Okay, so let's jump into this idea of history as something that we grow up understanding as objective. And you having Gary as a teacher and you recognizing that a couple of the things that you learned that were, you know, completely true might not have been. What was that like?
Yeah, so just finding out stuff about, you know, the example I was using was the internment camps during World War II with FDR, with the Japanese American people. You know, once I read something like that, and there's so many things that are in this
book. Swept under the rug.
swept under the rug, but also you get a feeling of, wow, I just found that out. And the second part of that is, wow, I shouldn't have just found that out. You know, this should have been expressed to me a little earlier. And that's what basically almost you had a couple of those moments every week with Richard in class, is just these absolutely mind-blowing, you know, we call them, anyone who's watched the Matrix, that the red pill, that analogy is a little played out, but that's truly what it is.
That's awesome. I have had some of my fair share of, I have had my fair share of those moments where something clicks in your mind and your eyes open and it's like you've seen the world in an entirely new way. And you're like, whoa, that changes everything. Yeah,
it's crazy. It completely opens you up and it just shifts the way you see everything afterwards. So this is not for, you might need a glass of water while drinking this book because it's.
While drinking this book?
Yeah, it's some tough pills to swallow. Did I say while drinking this book?
Yeah.
All right, my bad. While reading this book.
That's hilarious. Okay. So let's talk about history and how to find truth. So I imagine that Gary's pretty good with his, you know, going through history and reading it and understanding truth. What are some takeaways that you have had from having him as a teacher and having him as somebody that you look up to for really deciphering what is true and false in this world?
Yeah. So he does a great job of this. I wanted to shout out our podcast as well too, Hot Water History, because we dive pretty deep into this stuff. And he talks about how we're made to wonder as human beings. We're made to question the surroundings that we've been handed, in a sense, and we want to make sense of this existence. And history allows us to do that. It's the study of being a person when done well. It's the study of, and I want to come up with something good for this, but I'm not going to right now. It's the study. I think it's the study of being alive. I think history, you have to investigate the past to have some knowledge of the present and prediction, be able to predict the future. And history does that.
Yes. Mic drop. You said two things that were like, wow, okay, that's awesome. The first was, it's the study of being a person. And that's actually one of my favorite topics. Just what does it mean to be a person? What does it mean to live well? What does it mean to live at all? And I think that's really important. Just like exploring this idea of what does it mean to flourish, right? And I want to touch on that in a second, but you also said we're made to wonder. And just a clarification, is it wander with an A or wonder with an O, or both?
I guess it could be either, but
yeah, I think both are pretty good.
I meant wonder. We are meant to investigate our surroundings to see what this whole thing's about, because we're all trying to figure it out.
Mm-hmm. How have you learned to figure it out, like, through the lens of history? Because that's not a lens that I have studied deeply. I like history. I think it's a great tool. It's really, really fascinating to me, but I'm much more on the philosophy side of things. So how have you, I guess, expanded your own perception of the world that you live in throughout history?
Sure. So I have this t-shirt that I sometimes wear on the podcast. It's called, or it reads, "If the news is fake, how much of history is fake too?" And that's one thing that you really learn throughout history, is when you're in school, you sort of get, you're not really getting multiple arguments at the same time. So you'll have one teacher for the whole year, and you sort of know, especially if you know where they stand ideologically. And Gary was very good at, not only were his positions, a lot of his positions were so unpopular to me, that it was like,
oh my gosh,
it was like everything. Oh, so everything is off here. So
this is awesome.
You're arguing against my entire life.
Yep.
And just something like, even something like the Federal Reserve and the fact that the income tax wasn't even really a thing until the Civil War, and then 1913. It's like we've had more years. I haven't even done the math on this yet, but we've had almost as many years of having no income tax as we've had with an income tax. But we've all been so programmed to believe, you know, how are we going to pay for being able to live in a society without having an income tax?
Yeah, there are a lot of ways that, so I was always kind of skeptical of the verbiage programming. And then I had somebody explain it to me deeply, just this idea of like, if you have a child and you hit their hand every time they do something, like you can legitimately program them to stop doing the thing. And it's really, really fascinating to understand that there are a lot of ways that we act that are not natural, like natural in the sense that if you were born in another time, if you were born in another place, you would have acted the same way.
So you're doubtful on the idea of programming?
No, not anymore. I think it's, okay. I used to be though.
Okay. Because I think so much of our decisions are all subconscious.
Yeah.
Most of them are just us going on about, think about all the habits you have, like the habits that you grow, that you get accustomed to. You're not having deep conversations about whether I should do this or not. Mm-hmm. You just, at a certain point, you just do it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no, I don't see any reason why the same can't be said about our thoughts or our beliefs.
Yes. Or even like, this was an interesting mind melt moment for me, but the whole genetic thing, you grow up believing that you are a certain way because you have to be that certain way. But then if you really think about it, you understand that you clean your house every Sunday. Why? Not because of genetics, just because your family always clean their house, or, you know, they tell you to marry somebody that's like, you know, your family. That's just because it's habitual, right? If you get up at a certain time, it's just habitual. It has nothing to do with anything other than habits. And that's so fascinating to me.
Agreed.
Okay. Well, first, do you have any further thoughts on the programming thing? Because I don't think I explained it well, but if you can explain the whole...
No, you explained it. I feel like I explained it to the best as I don't think it's...
Okay, perfect.
...that deep.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so let's talk about... I mean, if we really want to go here, Christianity. Do you feel at all that Christianity has been programmed into you?
Ooh, that's a great question. That's a great question. What do you, okay. So in this sense, what do you mean programmed? So my short answer is yes.
Mm-hmm.
My long answer is, even though I believe it's been programmed into me from a very young age, I believe consciously, or as consciously as possible, because you never know, you never really have an idea of how much is conscious and how much is subconscious. But I believe as I've grown into an adult, and as someone who's questioned their beliefs as much as I have, I believe that the programming at this point is conscious, is that I believe it to be true consciously,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense.
What you said that you questioned it a lot. What was the inciting moment of like, okay, yeah, no, I do believe in this?
I love that question too. So it's been a long road. I really started taking it seriously, I think, honestly, when I started this book, because Rich Ed's great on Christianity as well. And he's always someone you could talk to about that stuff. Jordan Peterson, when he was hot,
yep.
That was a huge eye opener for me because I'm someone who I'd consider myself to be pretty disagreeable. I'm not like a like a real pushover type. And when Jordan Peterson came out and he was just, and this is something that I think so many guys need to hear, especially now, when he just comes out and he says, no, actually, don't be a pushover. Don't be soft. You know, the part of you that's actually a tough guy, when that's under control, that's actually divine. And I thought that was... I thought that was exactly what I needed to hear.
You're like, yes, that is it. That is what I want.
Because the thing is, that's like, awesome. And this happens all the time. And I'm actually super pumped we got into this because I've really wanted to express this. But I grew up in an in an area where if you argue with someone, or if you, let's say you criticize them, mm-hmm. a lot of times people might come back and say, you're not acting Christian right now. You're not acting, Ooh. You're not acting as Christ right now. Like mm-hmm. people, a lot of people's vision, especially with the modern Christianity, is that Jesus was this pussy, and he wasn't. You read the gospels, and this guy was a massive shit talker. I want everyone to read the gospels and just imagine Jesus being like the kid that stands up in class and was just like, no, teacher, I think you're wrong. Because that's basically what he was doing. I think that's another thing. So many people don't actually read the gospels. There's the old adage, there's five books in Christianity. There's Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John and the Christian. And most people don't listen to the first four. I think that's so true. And the Jordan Peterson thing was one. I talked about how Jesus, not this pushover guy. And then the third one was Jerry Boyer's The Maker versus the Takers. That book everyone should read yesterday, because it completely debunks the myth that Jesus was this guy who knew nothing about economics. And this is another thing. It's, oh, you make a ton of money. You're not acting like Christ. Why do you have all this money? Because Jesus realized, and this is true, that there's different ways of wealth attainment. He did not hate free markets. He did not hate capitalism. His dad, as a carpenter, was working in some of the wealthy cities and city states nearby. He knew the difference between wealth that was gained voluntarily and wealth that was stolen from people. And when you're opened up to that fact, that's where it really opened up for me. Those three things right there I'm all in now.
I think it's also the I don't know if this is Buddhist or if this is Stoic or both. But I think that it's in line with Christianity, and that Jesus was very adamant about not being controlled by anything. Like, he didn't want, you know, a rich man to not be able to give away his money. Why? Because it was something that he tied his own worth to. Like, that's not something that was accurate. Like, that's not real. That's not good. And so I think that that's where we get the idea of, you know, Jesus didn't want you to have money. I think the interesting point that you bring up with that is, what are the responsibilities whenever you have money, though? And what are the, I guess this actually brings up the idea of character. And I imagine that you have a lot to say on this, because Jordan Peterson is a big character fan. But I think at the heart of it, it is all character. It's the depth. It's the, who are you and who do you want to be? And how do you align yourself with what is good, and how do you decide what is good? So my question in that, because that was jam-packed with a lot of big topics, is if you break down your understanding of Christianity, what is at the heart of it for you?
Well, the heart of it for me is to carry your cross, whatever that may be. I know that doesn't really have to do with money, but the idea that...
Interesting.
So, I I've had this belief for a little while. A lot of people, when they jump into the most famous philosophical question is, you know, why do good things or why do bad things happen to good people? And people, you can think about that for the rest of your life. But I believe that the better question to ask is, well, isn't it better that the bad things are happening to the good people? What happens when bad things happen to bad people? Because when bad things happen to bad people, really bad things happen.
A little bit deeper.
Sure. So when you get into, we all go through bad things, mm-hmm. but I believe that the test to see if we are a good person or if we are a bad person is how we handle those bad things. It's how we handle the cross. Do we get up and do we carry our lives out and live with a purpose, or are we going to become, you know, take like the Columbine shooters? Those are bad things happening to bad people right there. Those guys, they, those guys had terrible, terrible things happen to them. But
afterwards?
No, like during their lives up to that moment. I'm saying they didn't know how to handle the bad things happening to them during their life. And when bad things happen to bad people, it's a disaster. And that's why, and this is what Jordan Peterson gets into. You shouldn't ask for, I don't think you should ask for a life of ease. I think you should ask for the strength to live a life of purposeful hardship, of meaning.
I don't disagree with that at all. I want to clarify though on the other thing. So do you think, when do these people turn bad? Like,
I don't know, but I don't know that. I don't know that point, but that stuff's kind of relative, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree. I'm just confused as to the whole bad things happen to bad people. Like, do you mean like whenever bad things, so.
It's better if you had to choose between two people and one of them's good and one of them's bad, and you had one bad thing and you had to drop it on either one, you would want to drop that bad thing onto the good person.
Okay, I wouldn't disagree, but do you think that's how it works? Where it's like a God's like, or
I don't know if it's like that.
Hey, I got something bad.
No,
let me drop it on somebody.
No, I'm trying to make a broad point there about, you know, carrying your cross, but I don't think it's like a negotiation at the top.
No, okay, I wouldn't disagree. I fully agree with your whole carrying your cross thing. This is something that I've been thinking about a lot, because so I've been in this influx period where I'm trying to prove Christianity to myself, completely open to being proven wrong and completely not choosing a side, aware of the fact that there are biases in me. Like, there are ways that I deeply understand the Catholic faith. Why? Because I grew up Catholic. So I understand it well. And that helps me in some senses, because that means that whenever I want to question something or whenever I want a deeper answer, that's a big answer for me. Like, and I could probably find a big answer somewhere else. But I was thinking about this a lot, because there was this point whenever I was kind of comparing people. I like to look at the effects, right? Like, what are the philosophies that people have, and what are the outputs of those philosophies? Like, is it a good output? What does that mean? Because usually you find that the way that somebody views the world, their philosophy, their ideal is a certain thing. And the way that we make choices is highly reflective of our philosophy. It's called sense of life. The way that we make choices and the way that we interpret and intake, I guess, the world. And so it's really, really interesting, because Christians are interestingly deep. Not all of them. Not all of them at all. But some of them are very, very deep. And it has to do with the willingness to suffer. And I know that there are people that say that, you know, you don't have to suffer. And I don't disagree with that.
I disagree with that.
I don't know. I think that you can reframe a lot of things so that it doesn't seem like a suffering thing. You can reframe, you know, like, what's a good example? What would an example of good suffering be to you?
Working out.
Okay, but I could, like, I don't see that as suffering though.
Why not?
Because it's fun.
Not every day.
Oh my gosh, yes.
You want to work out every day? You wake up every day, and you, even if you do it, I'm not saying you don't do it.
Okay.
I'm saying, and even within the workout, you get to a point where I want to get out of here. You know, you get to the 24th mile of the marathon. You're like, I'm out. I don't want to do this. There's something that forces you to grow as a person, I believe, that's deep down there when we suffer. And I think that's where we gain our wisdom, is through that suffering.
Yeah. So this is really fascinating to me, this whole concept of suffering. And I think the only person to answer all of these questions and to really understand this topic in particular is Jordan Peterson, because like, this is his thing.
I don't know. I think I'm doing pretty good.
No, I think you're doing fantastic. You're like, I've taken in so many of his things. You're like, I can give you fake Jordan Peterson for a minute.
Yeah, right.
Turn on your Jordan Peterson for me, Charlie.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Anyways, so So for example, there's this woman that I knew, and she was just going through hell because of her family situation. And like, I was talking to her and I could just, I don't know, I could feel how sad she was and how much it hurt her. And yet she just kind of looked at me and was like, smiled, and then said something about Jesus. And I was like, damn. Just damn. Like, that's not normal. And the fact that Jesus, like, even the symbolic Jesus allows people to do that.
Yeah, I agree. And that's another thing with the good thing, good people versus bad people, is it's all relative. So you are right. You know, you don't know what is necessarily a good thing or a bad thing at the time that it happens. You know, there's been some, I'm sure there's been some, there's been some parts of people's lives that are absolutely tragic, but a lot of good came out of it. And the same could be said about the opposite end of that. Mm-hmm. And so you don't really, once again, we're speaking really generally when we talk about good things, good people, bad people. I was more so making my point about the carrying your cross, and mm-hmm. that I believe, like the example you just said, that's a good person right there. That's a really, they've taken on a lot. They're carrying their cross right now, and they're inspiring others. You're bringing this up on a podcast, and that's a super inspirational episode. I believe that's the cross right there.
Yeah. So, okay. So then you have this understanding of, you know, carry your crosses. Like if you're in a situation where it sucks, okay. Caveat though, slight devil's advocate. I don't know if that's the right word to use right now, but, on the other hand, I have seen way too many Christians take up a cross that did not belong to them. Like they're like, I need to suffer through this. And I'm like, no, you don't. Just like, it's like you're on a straight line. You're on a path that just does not suit you. And there's a parallel path and you could just step off and go to the other one. And you're like, no, but this is what Jesus wants me to do. And I'm like, how?
Can you give me an example of that? I'm not sure what you mean. So someone purposely going the hard way? Is that what you mean?
Yes. And I don't know if that's a bad thing per se. Like, I think, I don't know.
I just don't. I'm trying to think of an example of where that'd be the case, but I can't think of any.
Okay. An example. Okay. Actually, this is the right way to go with this. Fasting and giving certain things up whenever you shouldn't. Like, I used to get into this like mental battle of like, does this make me wrong to do this? Or does this make me wrong to do this? And I think that there's such a tie towards good and wrong, and it becomes very, very hazy, the line between, am I doing a good thing or am I not? Right? Like fasting, for example, if I eat meat on Lent, if I eat meat on a Friday in Lent, okay, I sat with myself for like 45 minutes just thinking through, trying to logically get to a point where I'm like, I don't even know if I fully believe in this stuff. But I know that this is set. And if this is true, then XYZ. The problem that I have is that there's so much tied into this idea of this is good and this is bad. You, because you are intelligent, or like you are a mentally acute, I don't know what a good word for it would be, human person, you can make that call. You can say suffering is actually good for me as a person because it makes me better. And it gets me to the end that I actually want to get to. And that's why you
not within natural law. You keep switching.
No,
natural
that's
law.
Fine. Okay. Yes, I agree. Okay. I see the disconnect. So I think that there is. So this is what this is. Yes. Okay. I think what is objectively correct is written into natural law. Do we agree? Do like, what is natural law? Do we need to go there?
Yes.
Potentially? Okay.
Yeah.
Natural law is the laws written into the universe. Something is like good and something is bad. And what I mean by that is whenever you do something, it has negative consequences already built into it. The non-aggression principle is natural law. I know where the Catholic Church stands, but I don't know if it's objective what the Catholic Church says, because it's not written into something like a natural law. And so then the Catholic Church has defined its morality and immorality, and it's possible historically that that came directly from Jesus, and that's what we believe. I'm questioning that. I'm questioning the dogma, the precepts, the laws of the church. And
but I'm saying, why does it have to be backed into natural law when it could be backed into better reasoning than just our natural state as Catholics? Not our natural state as humans, sorry.
Yeah.
I believe that Catholicism is aligned heavily with natural law, but I do see parts where it sways, but I don't necessarily think those parts are bad.
I probably don't either. I don't disagree with Catholicism. I just entertain a lot of thoughts. So the thing with this is having sex with multiple women, having, you know, 10, 20 wives, it's societally accepted or denied. In our society right now, it's not.
But this is the thing that you keep getting hung up on. Like the church is outside of society.
That's what you believe, but that is not objectively like I need that point. I don't understand that point within how it's rooted. Other than Peter said.
That's it. That's it. The collection of saints, the collection of priests and popes, they came up with that, and I believe that to be true.
Why?
And that's tough to, I know that's tough to grasp, but
it's only tough. I used to believe it. I don't disbelieve it entirely, but I question it more now than I ever did.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to convince you overnight, but I'm trying to think.
You can think on this.
Yeah, like I said, this is something that Gary talks about too. Like some of this is Catholic dogma. Like you're not gonna sway someone on that. You're not gonna.
But I think that even Catholic dogma, like, there's got to be some way. There is some way. If something is true, there are ways to come to it from many different angles. So if I say I don't know if I agree with the dogma, and then I, you know, do a ton of research and really, really, really deeply understand certain things, and then come to it and say, okay, now it makes sense. That's what I'm looking for. The now it makes sense.
Okay, but this is the problem, and this is such that this is completely the issue with modern Christianity, is people come up with their own versions of it.
Yes.
And they end up worshiping themselves. That's all it is. Is people are worshiping themselves when they come to this. So it's better to be within the church and argue within the church than it is to and to disagree within the church. It's not like Gary and I are on board with every priest, every bishop. Absolutely not. But the roots of Catholicism we still believe to be true. And that last part's not a great answer, but I believe it's better to be within and to disagree than to come up with your own version of something that's completely different and end up worshiping that, which is just worshiping yourself.
I do not disagree. I think it honestly goes back to the whole. So I'm huge on, like, God is truth. That is what the Catholic Church teaches. He is truth. Right? Like, it's not God is found in truth. God is truth. So I don't think that even if you go to a Muslim country, even if you're in, you know, Arabia, where it doesn't matter where you are, if you can still find God through what you have available there, that is truth. Like, and I think that that's what I'm looking for is the whole, I don't know if you could entirely say that every single piece of Catholic dogma is able to be found everywhere. And maybe that's like,
That's for sure true.
Yeah. And I know that the Catholics, I know that, like I said, like I understand Catholicism pretty well, but obviously there's still areas that I need to improve. what I don't think is fair is for Catholics to say, you are lucky because you were born into this true religion. And I'm like, why was I so lucky? You know, why are the Muslims in their religion? Why are the, you know, why do all of these different people, why are they unlucky to be born in their religion? Like, it doesn't make sense.
I think my answer to that would be, like you said, the Catholic Church, or more so, I guess, speaking more broadly, the Christian faith is more closely tied into truth revealed to us through our lives than the other religions are.
What do you mean by that?
Take something that this is a very much like the path to Christianity, the idea that you carry your cross and you live your life with purpose is more real to the human experience than some other religion. It's more aligned with who we naturally are.
So why does the Catholic Church do that better than any other Christian?
Every Christian, because the Catholic Church puts the most emphasis on the tradition than any of the other Christian faiths.
And that's always been interesting to me, this idea of, like, I know that some people argue against the hierarchy, but the hierarchy, like, I definitely have some qualms with certain aspects of it, but the reason that we have a consistent Christian Catholic faith is because of the Catholic hierarchy. Like, no matter how dumb it got in something like the Renaissance, no matter how...
The Catholic Church probably saved Christianity.
I know. I think that's really, really fascinating to me. I think that for my own understanding of things, and maybe this is just my bias, but the Catholic Church makes sense to me historically more than any other Christian faith. And also I appreciate how deep they go with things. Like one of the pillars of world philosophy, multiple pillars of world philosophy were Catholic. Like, that's really fascinating to me.
It's very deeply tied with intellectual pursuit at its best.
So fascinating to me. The thing that I guess have issues with right now are the right and the wrong, because right and wrong, it is so easy to get into your mind, it is right to do this and it is wrong to do this. And it is so easy to bind yourself by the things that you tell yourself are right and that are wrong. Like, if I start going to daily mass and then I miss daily mass, I will feel bad. Even though that, like, that's not right or wrong. I'm just going to daily mass.
Okay.
But I'll feel bad as if I sinned. That's like, I think that that's dangerous.
I don't think that's dangerous.
Why?
It's much better to feel bad about missing a daily mass than I just killed someone. You know, like that's a muscle you've created over time.
What about a wife?
You're so built up spiritually and mentally that you feel bad over missing a daily mass.
Okay, what about a wife who's being beaten by her husband and is afraid to leave because she does not feel like it's the right thing to do? Extreme case, I know, but like sometimes you have to go to the extremes to actually...
Well, I get it. Yeah. But what do you... I don't really get what you're asking with that.
Well, the Catholic Church says that it is right to stay with your husband, but also she feels... hypothetical, of course, but she feels the commitment and she feels like it is her cross to bear, but she's getting beaten and like obviously it's not the right thing for her.
Why isn't it the right thing for her?
Well, should she get beaten? Is her husband a good man? No.
I think we got confused there about who we're talking about. Okay. I said why isn't it the right thing? I was referring to her staying.
Yeah, I don't think it's the right thing for her to stay with an abusive husband and in an abusive marriage.
Okay, sure. I'm not saying I disagree with that.
Yeah, but I think that there are ways...
I don't think the church would necessarily disagree with that either.
No, I don't think so either, but I think there are ways that she could convince herself that it would be a good thing for her to stay. I think that's dangerous. The way that we can convince ourselves that something is right, and then we can feel bad for not doing something, even though it's like...
That's okay, just, actually, that's conscious. That's just being conscious. That has nothing to do with, I mean, that has little to do with the Catholic Church. Regardless of what faith...
This is interesting.
Regardless of what faith you believe, you're always going to have that knot in your stomach over something. That doesn't just leave you because you joined a... That doesn't just leave you because you left a religion.
No, you're right. You said something earlier and it kind of simmered for a second and then it came back up. You said that it makes a lot of sense that like you would rather be more good than less good, right? Like there's okay, this is good, and then somebody can go above and beyond or somebody can go below and beyond.
Right. You've developed yourself into thinking that missing daily mass is bad. You're probably doing pretty good compared to, you know, most people.
What is the level? Do you think
a better muscle to reach than I just killed someone. I just stole their wallet.
What do you think about people that believe that Christian music is bad?
Christian music?
Yeah. Like it has come from a certain place and it's like, it's not good.
I've never even heard that. I think Christian music is phenomenal. This. I think classical Catholic music is awesome.
There are some really good ones.
I think some of the new stuff is not that good.
I think this is controversial. This is so bad. I'll say it anyways though, because you bring out the best and the worst in me, Charlie. Okay, so basically, I think that some of the Christian music artists have become Christian music artists because they couldn't have made it otherwise. So then their stuff sucks.
Based.
Ass.
Based. I don't mind that.
But it works.
I don't mind that take it all.
I'm like, I don't want to be a but like, they suck.
I'm not gonna lie. I'm not that deep into the Christian music scene.
Neither am I. But I've heard some stuff. I'm like.
The classical Catholic stuff that I hear at my church, which is pretty
old. Are you a Latin school? Music? Are you a Latin?
No, I'm not a Latin.
It says a lot about a person.
But I think those people are really special, to be honest. And that's it's actually getting shut down here in Chicago.
Is
the
it?
Latin mass from their bishop.
That's another thing. How do you go about all of the controversies within the church and like the split between the Eastern Orthodoxy and Catholicism? How do you decipher that?
What do you mean? I'm not Eastern Orthodox.
No, I know that, but the Catholic Church split from one church into the Eastern Orthodox, and I believe it was, I don't remember if it was Vatican II or if it was one of the Vatican councils, and they split because of the decisions made. The bishops split.
Okay. So I'll put it like this. My favorite ice cream flavor is is Ben and Jerry's Half Baked.
That is so
just because there's a lot of other ice cream flavors doesn't mean that I'm not going with Ben and Jerry's Half Baked. People love making this argument against Catholicism is they say, well, why are there so many denominations with Christianity?
I don't care about all the other denominations, but the Eastern Orthodox keeps everything consistent except for this one Vatican Council's decision.
Yeah, and honestly, I'm going to be honest, I haven't looked into that nearly as much as I should, but the argument that really pisses me off is that everyone that just said, oh, there's a new split every other day. Like, I'm not the one splitting. I am staying with Ben and Jerry's Half Baked Roman Catholic Church.
I understand that. All right. Final. What do you want our final topic to be? We can make this like 5 minutes.
Give me a lightning round. What's my lightning round?
Oh, okay. 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 Are you ready for this? Why do you believe in a God?
Ooh. Well, that's not a lightning round question. That's like a, do you have the rest of my life question? That's I believe in a God because I believe that I don't think I need reason to believe that there's a God. I believe that he exists on its own. And I believe that's been laid out to me through my short time on earth so far.
Interesting. I don't want to add too much, but it is interesting to me because like whenever I'm in different mindsets and whenever
I have a really tough time listening to the atheist arguments, and I used to listen to them, but now it's been so evident within my own life, mm-hmm. in my own personal journeys that I can't. They're not going to get me on that.
It's not even the arguments for me, because like I could listen to the arguments and then I have to go deeper. What it is for me is whenever I take the philosophy and just like really, really sit with it and really imagine and just like play out in my mind and in my day to day what it would be like to live like that. Nothing feels as good as Christianity. Like I don't interact with people well whenever I am nihilistic or whenever I don't believe that there's a God. I don't see, you know, the trees and the beauty as much whenever I don't believe that there's a God. And it's so strange how the way that you see the world is so impacted by what you believe in terms of philosophy. Ridiculous. Okay.
That was a great thought. Yeah.
Why do you care about freedom? Like, why do you care about, you know, this history stuff and doing this book and making this a part of your life?
Sure. Well, a big part of it was over COVID. I don't want to do that again. I don't believe that another human being has the power to lock me into my house against my own will. And that's a pretty simplistic argument, although I think it's a good one. And I would say for the greater society, I just am super pumped up. I think the most prosperous societies are the ones that are least into central planning. And I think by far the least prosperous societies are the ones with the most central planning throughout history. So I'm just super optimistic about the ability for humanity to come up with ideas that don't require force.
You could almost say that's what happens with psychological warfare. Like there's this concept called psychological warfare where it's like, unbeknownst to you, you are being taught to do something that you don't actually consciously want to do. You're just like kind of habitually being taught to do it. That's not forceful. So then it's not just not forceful, but it's also like, I mean, in some senses, I guess, but it's not forceful.
I think it is forceful.
What? Okay. Clarify what forceful is. Against your will?
Not voluntary.
Okay.
So it's the law for me to go to, for example, let's just say it's the law for you to go to public education, mm-hmm. which it is. So you're sort of held against your will, or your parents are being held against their will to send you to a school.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say the school can create the programming from there.
Yeah. When do you start having rights? Like as a child, when as a child, your parents can tell you something and can forcibly, I mean, people argue on this, but like for the argument's sake, can forcibly, you know, teach you to do something, be like, hey, don't do X, Y, Z. And that's not a bad thing. But when does it become the, hey, don't do that. Don't force this.
That's a great question. I honestly wouldn't. That people keep going back and forth on that. And I'm going to be honest, I don't have a good answer for that.
Cool. Neither do I. Okay. Next question. What does it mean to you to be good?
I believe to be good is to live out your purpose. Obviously, we've been talking a lot about Christianity, carrying your cross, without interfering other people's missions as well.
You say mission. Mission is a very like
purpose. Their end goal that doesn't interfere with mine. Their hardships that they choose.
So do they choose their end goal, or is that bigger?
The hardships that they choose.
Gotcha. Okay. And last and final question. Let me make this a really, really solid one. Whenever you consider in your mind the best version of you, who are you?
I love that question. The best version of me is someone who I can look back on, the person, you know, I could rewatch this interview and I could say, you know, that guy's conquered some dragons since that last interview. That guy, he set out to do a bunch of things and he was able to get it done, and he never sold himself up to gain popularity or to gain some status. He always kept true to himself and what he believed in. I think that's when I look back on myself and I could say that guy, you know, that guy's slayed some dragons and he's been through it. I think that's where I'm going to be. You never reach the best version of yourself, but you always want to keep getting better. So when I can look back and say those things, I'll be proud.
Whenever you can look at yourself and be like, okay, mad respect.
Nice yeah, job. Exactly. Exactly. Just such a long journey.
Oh yeah. Definitely. Okay. Well, Charlie, this has been so much fun. It was like a, I don't know. We went back and forth on a lot of different topics. So thank you. Yeah, that was awesome.
Hey, whenever you need a plan B, you know, you have a podcast during the week, you know, you got an hour 30 to kill. I hope the people enjoyed it. Everyone grab a Twisted History of the United States. I want to donate to the crowdfunding site July 4th. This book's going to make people free.
All righty. Well, thank you, Charlie.
Yep.
I hope that you found this episode enriching. I would love to hear your thoughts. If you would like to write a rating or review, that would be fantastic. You can also follow me at Inhale Podcast. I'm looking forward to our next episode. Cheers.